Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 164. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me, and we're setting a little bit of history here, Cole Coffee. The very first MMA Roadshow ever taped after 18 holes of golf.
That is true. I was like, what first did we do now? 164 episodes, man. That's good stuff, man. I appreciate that we've been able to do this, and that's crazy. I appreciate you guys coming along for the ride. But yeah, man, John had a round of golf set up for us today.
I don't know if it was a awesome. Wise decision. I mean, it was fun. We got to hang out with Brett Okamoto. He was there. My buddy Tony was there with us as well.
The wise decision was to do the how do you call that format
that we did? A little two-man scramble.
Best ball.
Best ball.
Like that worked out because, to be honest, I haven't hit a golf ball. I haven't brought those clubs out in probably over 10 years. I probably didn't play the last few years while I was in Columbus, and then I haven't touched them at all. They've been in my garage or in whatever the first apartment I had. They sat in a closet, and today they finally brought them
out. Dusted them off.
Yeah, and it's funny because I mentioned them.
And by the way, let's go. The nickname is there now. now that the golf has been played – Kenbo Slice.
Kenbo Slice.
Because basically, Cole Coffee knows that his, if you want to call it a slice.
My power fade.
If you want to call it a power fade, it's a strong power fade. It's a strong power fade. Basically, he knows when he's getting up on the tee that this ball is going right. Kenbo Slice knows the ball is going right. So he literally just, you know, puts his shoulder to the flag and then takes like a 45-degree angle to the left over here and aims over there. And at first I wanted to say something to him because he was on my team. We were playing, you know, two-man scramble. Me and Cole Coffee were together. We were going up against Tony and Brett Okamoto. And I wanted to say something to him, but I noticed that at a 45-degree left angle over here, your ball would end up straight in the fairway.
Yeah, it works. It is the most bizarre thing. And you're not the first person that wants to be like, wait, bro, there's houses over there. Don't point that way. I'm just like, trust me, it's going to happen. It's just going to curve over. And it did. Not all the times. There was a couple times where it decided to go straight. But, you know, while I'm pointing to the side, it's never a good thing. But yeah, most of the time the Kenbo Slice worked out. And it was awesome, man. Yeah.
If you guys
don't know, Brett Okamoto, man, that dude can fucking – he can slam the ball, man.
He was banging it. Dude, Brett Okamoto off the tee. Don't get in a long drive contest with that guy.
Yeah. Man, I like his gear. Like, again, my club set is probably easily, 13 years old or something. And I can see the differences. And it's funny because I used to play golf when I played in a band with a guy. He had, like, an old set of wood drivers,
legit wood. Yeah, yeah.
Like, and the heads were so small.
Right.
So, like, I'm like, man, like, golf had to be so tough back then to use that kind of gear. And Brett's driver, and even yours, is a bit of like an, I don't know if they call it an oversized driver. So it's got a big, wide face on it, and it just feels like you can swing balls out and you're going to make contact with that ball. But even with that, you know, you still have to have decent form or you're going to hit it hard, but it's just going to go further in the opposite direction. But he was smashing it, man. And it was fun. That was a lot more fun than I initially thought. I was nervous, to be honest. I was nervous going out there. You know, I hadn't played in so long, and I was like, man, I'm just going to slow everybody down. I was thinking the excuses in my head of why I wasn't going to go. And I was like, all right, just do it. It'll be worth it. And it was probably one of the funner outdoors that
we had
I've
a good
done
time.
Here in Vegas.
So, if you ever
Aliante, we should say we at the Aliante Golf Club.
Aliante Golf Club, which is
never
North
been
Las
before.
Vegas, man. It was kind of on the edge of town. We could see the mountains. It was great.
See the mountains, and it's up by Nellis, Nellis Air Force Base. So we're having like F-16s, B-1 bombers, like
that was cool.
All kinds of shit. Like I eat that stuff up, so I was digging it, man. I was. Woo.
That was cool.
I was digging it.
We're not the biggest golfers in the world, but hey, listen, if we do, and we don't get a lot of spare time.
Unless you're talking about body size.
Well,
we are some of the biggest
golfers in the world. But, yeah, I mean, hey, listen, the MMA Roadshow was down to play around if we're ever in your town. You know, I mean, it's a chance to get outside.
We hit the frosty beverages.
Little
don't
fresh
believe
air.
That.
Oh, yes.
That's... Even though the worst part was there was no beverage carts going around.
I know.
You know, we thought at one point that they said that the manager, because the normal cart person didn't show up, so that the manager was running around. We're like, it doesn't matter. It could be a cute girl. It could be a dude. As long as it's cold beverages. And it actually worked out so that when we rounded the bend going from the 9th to the 10th, we made a pit stop yep. at the clubhouse and re-upped on the frosty beverages and took a little pit stop.
Yeah,
so it was great.
It may be a good idea to play 18 holes before the MMA Roadshow. It may be a bad idea. I'm not sure.
Well, it's
I'm definitely Roadshow ready at this point. I'm just saying that.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I'm glad we did it now as opposed to the middle of like August like it. It could have been – because it took us about
– Yeah, we did 5 hours. Yeah, about, we were right about 5 hours. We let a couple of people play through that had smaller groups than we did, so we
some of them were ballers too, man. Some of the ones that – there was that the first group of two that went through were smashed, and I was like –
Yeah.
I wanted to give them the little golf clap. I was like, well done. Well done.
That was good.
That was good
fun.
Well,
it was fun. So, and ironically, because we had set this up about a week out, we got to be with Brett Okamoto.
Yes, big
when
news.
The big ESPN announcement came out, that Ariel Helwani is moving over from MMA fighting to ESPN. So we got to be hanging out with ESPN's Brett Okamoto. Now, of course, I guess I should say, if we're peeling back the curtain a little bit, damn near everybody in the industry knew this was happening.
I didn't know it was happening.
Shut up. Everybody knew it was
happening.
I knew
he wanted to go, but I guess
this had been out
there
for a while. This had been out there for a while, but it was the official announcement today.
Yeah.
We've been hearing rumblings for quite some time. Good for him, of course. I mean, I know this is a place that Ariel wants to be. I tell you what I'm interested to see is I think the next six – because here's the thing is I think everybody knew that he was going to ESPN. What I didn't know is that it was going to happen as soon as June. The announcement came out today that's going to be in June.
Yeah, it's roughly like just over 2 weeks, right?
That's right. Now, we don't know exactly what the first date is, and Brett actually admitted he was like, I don't know what his start date is either. He's like, I know it's sometime in June.
When's
so
Chicago?
The interesting, well, that, see, so that's the interesting part, UFC 225, right around the corner.
Well, that's June 9th. Because I did see the Casey put on Twitter. Casey did say that Chicago was going to be the last event that he does with him. So,
okay, so
he is doing that Chicago card.
So 225 will probably be the last,
be his last
okay.
event. So.
I think everybody knew it was coming. Knowing that the broadcast deal doesn't start until 2019, I didn't know if maybe they'd stall it a little bit and put it off till later in the year. But
yeah.
You might as well go ahead and start building up your audience, right?
Right.
But it's going to be an interesting time. I think the next 6 months or so are going to be interesting because I'm telling you right now, there's going to be other movements. Like Jeff Wagenheim had already gone. And this is the whole thing.
Where was he?
If you
with,
look, if you look
Jeff?
Behind the scenes, he was at the Washington Post for
okay,
a little while.
Yeah.
He ended up going to ESPN as well, and I think a lot of people probably saw the writing on the wall at that point. Like, hey, listen, you know, why is Jeff Wagenheim moving over to ESPN to, you know, beef up their combat sports? And I think if you saw the writing on the wall, you could definitely see it at that point. Like, oh, okay, I see what's about to happen here. But
which
here's
wall,
what's interesting:
which
is,
wall do you look for? Your writing.
Just
urinal walls or
the
like,
wall?
The wall?
The wall. It's just another brick in the wall. I think what's going to be interesting to see is where the movement is after this.
Yeah.
Because listen, some of the people you know, some of the people that you relate to, some of the people that you listen to, there's going to be a shift. And this is what always happens when there's broadcast deals
changes
signed. Yep,
stuff.
Yep. People are going to move around. So yeah. I think the next couple months are going to be pretty interesting to see from a media perspective who moves where, who does what.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a new landscape, and let's not forget, I should say, you know, the ESPN Plus deal we already know about. There's still another deal in place. The actual broadcast deal still needs to be signed. I've been hearing that Fox is still the leading candidate, but who knows?
Which
who
makes
knows?
Sense that if there was people were saying that they thought there was going to be a Fox ESPN partnership, mm-hmm. sounds like this is the ESPN part that we were talking about. So it still makes sense that Fox would maintain that partnership. And maybe it's a matter of, I know that they wanted more money per year, but maybe due to the fact that they got this influx coming from the ESPN Plus, maybe they don't need to have
That's
as much per
it.
Year, but who knows. But I'm still pretty confident. I think Fox is going to come up with whatever number they need to maintain.
And all of a sudden,
I just don't see somebody coming in.
All of a sudden, the UFC is going to be real close to that $400 million a year that everybody said they couldn't get. Everybody said that, oh my God, Endeavor ruined themselves.
Have we heard the amount for the ESPN Plus?
$150 a year.
So that's $150.
So if you get $200 to $250 a year.
And what were they getting? What did it end?
They were getting like $120 a year.
Yeah, but didn't
from
it
Fox?
Go? Didn't it go up towards the end? Like I thought it. Maybe no. I thought it was scaled.
That was the high. Yes, that was the high part. They've already beat
so
the high.
They've already
end.
Surpassed it.
I'm telling you, man, they killed it. This is what frustrates me, is because you and I have always kind of talked about how we thought things were good and things were better, and you know, I've always said, listen, and I said from day one, listen, these people that have $4 billion to spend. They don't risk money. They don't come in. They're not Vegas gamblers. You know what I'm saying? They come in because they know what's up. And, yeah. And people, you guys are homers. You guys are homers.
Yeah. How many years is the ESPN deal?
5 years.
So 5 years. So they're already, that's what, $600 million? Is it $120 million? Or $140 million? How much is it for the ESPN Plus? I know you just told me.
Your math is terrible.
That's why I forgot. I forgot what the dollar amount.
5 years at $150. So
okay.
$750.
Wow, fuck.
Right there.
Dude.
Right there.
That's crazy. So roughly, say if they get maybe 150 out of Fox.
No, they're going to get $200 to $250.
You
so
think?
I'm telling you right now, they're either going to end up with $350 or $400 million. Exactly where they said they'd be.
That's tough. I wonder. Two sounds doable, but I would still think that they might scale it maybe and start with like 150, 175,
nah.
And then maybe end the last.
There's no way they're gonna pay what got paid for, you know, online streaming stuff. They're gonna have to pay more. I'm telling you.
They're getting less out of it because there's so much more now getting driven.
But they're still getting stuff on network television. They're still getting stuff on.
Yeah, but they won't. I don't see how they can have as many events as they're having this year if they're putting all this other stuff on. If they're putting 15 events.
Well, that's what remains
to
be seen. And listen, I've been talking to some people behind the scenes, and they said, listen, it's still pretty fluid behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Because that's what remains to be seen is how does UFC Fight Pass work out? How does this all work out?
I've heard like less pay-per-views,
right.
Like,
are there,
whether it be like only like 6 pay-per-views.
I don't think there's going to be less pay-per-views. I hate to say it, but I don't think there's going
to
be less.
I guess if you have to have content for these broadcast thing, you got to have something for Fox, you got to have something for ESPN Plus.
Yep.
There's only so many events.
But I'm telling you, man, the ESPN is going to start blowing. I mean, look, they just went and invested in Ariel. They already went and invested in Jeff Wagenheim. They're going to start doing more stuff. Now there's a podcast or a show, I should say, not even a podcast, like a show with Ariel and Chael Sonnen, and you know what I mean? Like there's going to be
sort
all
of like,
this program. It'll be on ESPN Plus.
Okay,
ESPN
but you think that's just going to be like the MMA Hour, but with Chael Sonnen?
Pretty much.
I imagine.
Well, they said it's going to be a 30-minute show though. So
MMA Half Hour.
The MMA Half
Hour called something else.
We'll see. It's Ariel and the Bad Guy, which is a pretty
Ariel.
Bad. It's a pretty bad title. It's
yeah,
bad title.
I mean, but.
But
I love Chael, man.
Oh, yeah.
I dig it.
Chael's
and
great.
I can see those two playing it, you know, like, you know, I can see Chael having fun pushing the line a little bit with Ariel because Ariel, you know, will try to play the straight man and Chael.
Right.
There is no straight man in Chael. Like, Chael will push the boundaries. So, I mean, it could be interesting. You know, I didn't know what to think about Brendan Schaub at first. I was just like, oh, I don't know. But, man, I love that show.
Yeah.
So I have faith that this could, you know, there's two good guys. That,
hey,
I mean, both of them can carry the show on
I'm,
their own.
I'm
so
telling
I mean, it makes
you right
sense
now,
that'll work.
I'm telling you right now, the thing is that I'm happy about is just, look, this is MMA in front of more eyeballs.
Sure.
You know what I mean? This
it's
is
great.
It. MMA is always going to be a niche sport. There's no question about it, right? Like, I know that, you know, Dana likes to say it's going to be bigger than soccer. Like, no, it's not going to be bigger than soccer. But the more eyeballs it gets in front
maybe
of,
in
the
Boise,
more
Idaho.
People get used to. That's right. No, the more people that it gets, I think that's a good thing. So,
yeah,
I'm interested to see what happens over these next couple months. Because, again, you know, now you've got a big hole in MMA fighting. How do they fill that? You know what I mean? And if somebody goes to fill that hole, then how do they fill that hole? And where do people go?
Yeah.
I mean, this is – and is ESPN going to hire more people? Is Fox going to hire more people if they re-up? If it's not Fox,
are they done?
If it's somebody
are they done
else.
Hiring? Probably not, right?
Oh, man, it's going to be incredibly interesting.
I can
see
them probably trying to snag some people from the UFC themselves probably.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be interesting to see.
Interesting.
So,
Congrats to all parties involved, man. That's
absolutely.
Good. That's
congrats
good shit,
to everybody.
Man.
It was fun to be able to hang out with Brett Okamoto when the deal got announced, because of course, you know, he knew well what was going on. He had kept his mouth shut for a long time, but he knew well what was going on as well. So it's kind of fun to pick his brain and talk to him about what was going on. So it's gonna be interesting. Listen, you're back from Brazil.
Yeah.
By the way, can I just say, I was a little bit jealous listening to the Roadshow segment that I was not involved in Brazil.
Was it fun?
The production value. The production value. I mean, when you went to go answer the door and bring in.
Right? Right?
I mean.
I was like, who can that be knocking on that door?
You guys brought incredible production value to the table.
I literally thought I was going to get kicked out of my room by the end, because on the left side, I'm pretty sure it was Kelleher to my room to the left.
Oh, really?
And then some Brazilian family or fighter or somebody was off to my right.
So you had fighters on both sides.
I think, but I'm not quite sure. I know for sure I think it was Kelleher's team, because I saw them coming out one day, because when we checked in, I was able to hop on that bus, that shuttle from the airport, so I knew we were getting there at the same time. Then I heard some other Americans coming into the room. They were still at the thing when I got up to my room. And I was like, oh, shit, I think Keller and them are right next to me. And I felt bad because I took a couple panoramic views from my my room. I had a balcony.
Right.
And so as I'm taking pictures, I'm like, oh, this is beautiful. And I'm going to pan to the right. Oh, there's a beach. Let me walk over to the edge of my balcony. But, like, where my balcony ends and just a couple feet, like, that's where my wall ends. But the wall, like, goes in about 3 feet and then continued about another 8 feet. That was the back window of Kelleher's room. So it felt like I would look when I went to take a picture of the beach down, it looked like I was like partially shooting in his room. So I was like, all right, I'm not going to do that shot anymore. I was like, I don't want to seem like a creeper. But man, that was a great fight. But it was super, super interesting. It was so like as that night was going on, you know, we're taping, and this was before the crazy shit that happened later on that night. I literally thought, I kept telling him, I was like, and you know how when those guys get going, like Fernanda can get very loud.
Oh, yes.
Albert is so loud. And I'm just like, guys, I'm like doing these hand motions, like bring it in, bring it in. And I'm like literally like, I'm going to have a fighter knocking on my door in like 2 minutes, like tell me to shut the hell up.
All right, so listen, I that's where I want to get into it with you, though, is because essentially like while you guys were recording this segment of the MMA Roadshow.
Or just after.
Is basically when everybody got robbed on the beach, right? And so that's what I want to ask you about, because you know, I mean, you and I have gone to Brazil quite a lot, either individually or together. And we talked about it last week. I mean, we joked about it, you know, like how much we love like finishing work and just going and going
sitting
over
the
to
cabana.
The kiosk, right? Yep. The cabana over there and drinking some beer. And, you know, I mean, hell, you were making jokes about stabbings and robberies in Brazil and stuff last week. And then all of a sudden,
there was a robbery.
the damn thing happened. So,
it was crazy.
Dude, just give me an idea, because, I mean, the story got out. It was funny because, I mean, you know, I knew about it, and I was kind of surprised that people picked up on it as a news story. I mean, I guess it is a news story, right?
Well, I guess it's a news story once the president of the company starts tweeting people and saying,
well,
hey, by
true.
The way, like, he set it up. Like, honestly, the PR staff didn't want it to get out. They were really upset that it did, and the way that Dana handled it. Because there's been so many, like... Excuse me.
Yeah, because Dana ended up telling
Brett
about it.
But yeah, he let Brett know, and he wasn't there. He didn't experience. He didn't have anybody besides a couple random staffers that went through it. So for him to break the news when a lot of families hadn't even heard really what was going on, you know, so that's not what you want to, you know. So everybody was getting tons of calls, and it was in the middle of the night. Everybody started getting calls after that. Are
just
you okay?
Checking on safety.
Are you all right? Yeah. You know, rather than let people sort of reach out and kind of say what had happened. So, I mean, I get it why he wanted to do that, but it just felt weird. And the PR was crushed the next day. They were so stressed out because the next day was early weigh-ins, and seeing on their faces, they were just like, we can't believe, one, that it happened, and two, how that it sort of got handled. Because they don't want people – I mean – Brazil already has sort of a perception, you know, like things are not going great down there right now. So the last thing you want to highlight and spotlight is that it's unsafe to go to their country.
Right.
You know, I think they're very happy and they're proud of the country. They realize that shit like this can happen. But, you know, you got to understand, it was 1:30 in the morning when it happened in an area we were in a further bay. We're in an area, but where we were staying is an area of the beach that isn't quite as populated, not quite further down as the Windsor Baja that we right. normally would stay at. And a couple nights had happened where, you know, people had stayed out there pretty late, so they kind of made it themselves a little bit more of a target. And I'm not trying to put any blame on what anybody did, because people are just doing what you do in Brazil.
You work and then you hang out.
But when you look at a lot of the other cabanas and kiosks and stuff later in the evenings, and, you know, some of the things that I had heard is that a lot of Brazilians weren't really going to these things. Like, these things are pretty much more for tourists late night. You know, they're next to the hotels, but, you know, unless there's just a local that's like, hey, there's no other watering hole nearby, I'm going to go walk over to a cabana. Brazilians aren't frequenting these things right. as much as a lot of the tourists are. So I don't want to, you know, put blame on any of our group, you know, for the fact that, you know, maybe we could have been they could have been a little bit smarter, because, you know, it could have been any of us doing what we did any other night over many, many years.
Oh, yeah.
That it was just felt like it was a matter of, like, it was that robbery lottery.
I assumed I'd be there.
If you were there, I guarantee we probably would have recorded over there, and we probably would have got all of our shit stolen, you know. And it's unfortunate when you hear how it sort of went down. You know, this car pulls up, and there were three guys get out of the car, and the car proceeded to go further back down the street. One guy walks past the cabana, gets a water, and by the time that he got back with the water, which if people were, I guess, if you in hindsight and you sit and you're like, okay, if I was really watching the situation, would the hairs on the back of my neck stand up? Like, something seems odd. This guy is walking down to the next cabana when clearly there's a cabana here
right.
that sells whatever this guy could probably looking at.
Right.
That the way these guys started their deal, they started on one end of their, it's like, so the cabana had, there's the main area where you can walk up and order your drinks. They're seating to the left and they're seating to the right. They started on the right side. If you're facing the cabana, they started on the right side and robbed a table that was at the end, and then proceeded to walk over to the cabana and actually rob the owner of the cabana. And then walked over, and I don't know if it was Matty Rad's. I heard that one manager say it, like, it was him, but I heard that it was Matty Rad or whatever. Grabbed his phone, you know, and he turned around and was like, what the hell? You know, what are you doing? And the guy showed a gun and then stuck the gun back into his waistband, you know, and, you know, part of my thinking, I was glad I wasn't there, because me being me would probably think, like, that's the point where I'd want to jump on a guy. Because if you're ever going to have a gun, you don't stick it back into your fucking waistband, because then it's fucking useless.
Right.
That's like rule 101 of dumb fucking gun usage. But it was at that point that a gentleman walked over on the other side and brandished his out. And that would have been the part where I got shot.
Right.
Going for the other guy.
That's where
I would have got shot.
Yeah.
And so I guess it happened pretty quickly. It was a matter of moments and stuff, but they quickly ran through. And did you hear about how they got their ship back?
No.
All right, I'll tell you this. I'll let you know at the end. So they I wasn't really supposed to know, but I kind of got it. But I'll find a way that we can sort of say it. They had, you know, grabbed Lillian, one of the PRs. They grabbed her necklace, pulled that out, grabbed her phone, grabbed, I want to say, her purse. And so inside of her purse, she's getting ready to move here to America.
Yeah, yeah.
So she had her visa and she had all the shit that she needed to move to the States. Grabbed Christian's stuff, grabbed his phone, Maddie's phone. So they grabbed mainly phones. You know, I heard stories. The one guy that got the gun put up against his head, I guess, you know, was trying to act like he didn't have anything, and he patted his leg and his phone was touch sensitive, so it light went off. And that's where they were like, you fucking with us, whatever,
right.
and stuck the gun up against his head. And that's when everybody was just like, okay, shit's real.
Just give him
here's,
what
here's
yeah,
your
yeah.
stuff. I did hear a story of one of our guys, fighter relations dudes, as they see it sort of coming on, switched his stuff out of his front pockets to his back pocket.
Right.
And then as they were like, you know, you got anything? He's patting. He's like, I ain't got anything. So, and they were trying to move pretty quick, so they didn't frisking anybody. So he was able to get out and get through. So, and all in all, they said it only took like a minute or 2 minutes, which I can't believe. It seemed, it probably is like one of those things too, where like the time slowed down.
It was probably less than a minute.
So it went pretty quick and efficient for how these guys did it and stuff. But so what I was told, and I won't say who told me, and I'm not what the best way to sort of, because it sort of like told me, it was like, it's off the record,
yeah,
right?
Because there was something that came out later that they got most of their stuff back.
Right. So how that came to be is the UFC's been putting a lot of effort into, even like with this thing with like Big Nog, and like putting
Investing in the favelas.
Investing into the favelas and investing into these centers,
right,
where people can go and get help, you know, and they're really trying to build them up. So in one of these favelas, somebody was looking through the paperwork and all the shit that they had, the booty, and noticed a UFC card. And notice like something with Lillian's, like her credential. Then they're like, wow. Oh shit. You know,
like
we just robbed some UFC people. So somebody gathered up all the passports and all the paperwork,
credit cards,
even the cards, and put them all back and dropped it off at one of the centers in one of those favelas. And that's how they got their shit back.
Wow.
So they call it like a Good Samaritan or something, but it was literally one of the guys that fucking was with the group, whoever robbed
just
and went
realized,
back.
Like, uh-oh.
They realized that, oh shit, you know,
these are people that have been trying to help us.
You know, these are not just normal tourists. They still lost the phones. All the phones, everything was gone. But a lot
IDs
of them.
IDs and credit cards.
IDs and credit cards, at least for one of the people that I spoke with, got it back. So, but at that point, they had already canceled all the cards.
So, what does that make you feel about, like, going to Everest? Because I'm not going to lie, like, that happened, and it's funny because, listen, as you said, if I'd have been there, we'd have probably been on that kiosk. Like, our schedule
for sure
would have been different. We'd have been robbed. And I didn't even tell my wife about it, man. I didn't say anything about it because I've been down to Brazil 29 times. My streak ended, but I've been down there 29 times. Thank you very much for the refills. But I didn't say anything because I didn't want her to necessarily get an adverse opinion. What do you feel? I mean, do you feel less – because you went down there on your own this time – Do you feel less safe? Do you feel like when the next trip comes out? I mean, we got Sao Paulo. I mean, Sao Paulo is a different town.
Yes
but...
and no. It definitely put a damper on what normally is a really, really fun trip. Like, it kind of took the wind out of the sails. Like, it was just such a downer experience. You know, thank goodness it could have been a whole hell of a lot worse. And then it probably would have been a whole different feel for me if somebody actually got injured. And there was, you know, could have been worse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then I probably would have been a lot more jaded about it.
Had a gunman discharged, right? Yeah. Somebody been beat up or something.
So for the fact that it ended as smoothly as it did, if there's a way to not feel as bad about it, I feel that way because I feel like it didn't go as bad as it could have been. Most of the people that lost their phones, they were UFC provided phones. They're all getting new phones, and for them to be able to get the cards, it sucks. It's a hassle. It's a lot of stress. I mean, I would never want that on anybody, so it could have been worse. But for me, it did kind of change the fact because, you know, we didn't go back to the cabana if you wanted to.
You didn't the rest of the
week. I thought about going over, like, maybe during the day.
Did they tell people not to?
Yeah, they did. They pretty much made it off. They pretty much made it off limits. There was a pool upstairs on the top floor and had a bar that stayed open to some point. But then some people just went and would get beer and just drank up there.
That's pretty much where we hung out.
Yeah. It was kind of like the security team just felt they're like, you know, this is not safe. Like, they're like, we don't want anybody going back over to the cabana. Go eat your dinner, go do whatever. And if you feel like you need to have a couple drinks to end the night, go up to the pool. We'll have others there.
Yeah.
And on the last day or two, they had, it was mainly you saw them on that last day, but maybe they showed up later on Thursday. They had security personnel outside, stationed outside of the hotel that they didn't have on the first day. So they actually had a presence there in case something happened. I think a lot of people were scared that they thought it was going to be worse. They thought that it was going to escalate, I guess. You know, there was like grumblings and fear of that they thought that a possible, like, hotel raid would happen.
Nah.
I know. It sounds outlandish, but, you know, you never know.
You got to be careful, and that's
kind of what they sort of protected and treated as, what can we do to make sure that something that we don't get blindsided? Because if it happens, let's be real. Like, hotel staff is not going to stop somebody coming when they're trying to just come and get out. They're just going to do what the – yeah, right? I mean, they're gonna back away, get what you need to do, and get out, you know, but – so I think that's why they went and hired some security to be there. But No, it doesn't change me. I still love Brazil. I mean, I thought the weather was absolutely incredible. It was so much cooler. I wasn't sweating nearly as much as I normally do
like
when I go down
there. As long as you don't mind a robbery or two, the weather's beautiful. don't take your phone out to take a picture of it.
I mean, we still took – I mean, like, we took Ubers. We even took Ubers without Brazilians with us, you know. So that was new for me, you know, was and I guess it was much more commonplace. So whereas I remember in the past, Uber was a hell of a lot more shady going down there. And, like, we didn't really feel safe for the most part using it. But, like, we used it – granted, we were only pretty much going down the street or going into town to work a couple of the events. But we took it down to that Chiscaria down the street, ate there three times. Mm. What was awesome about it, and I know I was burning out Fiasco and I was burning out Fernanda. I think ate there once or twice with us. I was like, it was either eat at the hotel or eat there, you know, or maybe go into town somewhere, which is crazy.
Chiscaria all day. Just
because it came out to like $20 for all you can eat steak. It wasn't like, is it the fanciest? Is it? No, but it was incredible. I love it. So I was like, dude, I will eat there every day. But I didn't. I ate there three times, though. But it was great. And I actually got to hang out with we were talking about MMA fighting earlier. So Esther and Casey were there. And that was fun kind of working with them. And anytime you go anywhere overseas or anywhere and you have other people kind of going through the same grind, the same awkwardness, the same language barriers, the same whatever it's good to have some friendly faces to kind of laugh it off with. So we had some good times with those guys, and it was really great.
Casey and Esther are strong. It'll be interesting to see. What do they end up going somewhere else? Does ESPN start chasing after them? They're pretty damn talented at what they do.
I've always liked those two and totally respected them. But after that trip, man, yeah, I mean, I love those two, man. I want the best for them. So I hope whatever shakes out, I'm sure they'll be fine. But, man, It was a good trip. It was a good trip.
Well, other than the fact we hear about loss. We hear about loss sometimes, and that's scary.
That's true.
But you know what? what about if we want to keep something?
Yeah, that's true. All right, so I'll be real with y'all. So we've taken on with Keeps, and Keeps is about keeping the hair.
A brand new sponsor of the show.
It's a great sponsor, a brand new sponsor of the show, and it's about keeping the hair that's on the top of your head.
And they approached us, and I said, listen.
Have you seen this man's curls?
I was like, I got a lot of hair. Now, granted, some of it's turning gray, which is scary.
Dude, I got the flecks of gray going, like, and that's not what Keeps is about.
No.
That's like
that's what
men's
I said.
Hair
I was
club
like,
you
got to turn to my man Cole Coffee.
I'll be real, y'all. I'm kind of – I can be vain at times. You know, I find myself, you know, when I see a snapshot of somebody's like, oh, let me cover the media day. They'll take a snapshot from behind. I'm like, oh, shit. My shit's starting to get thin on the top. It's starting to wear out a little bit, you know. So the fact that Keeps came around is a blessing. And for you folks, maybe you've noticed that you have a little less hair than you used to have, but you're not sure there's a real solution. The thing is, there are two clinically proven medications that let you keep your hair. And now they're inexpensive and easy to get. You don't need to lose your hair if you don't want to. And that's why I want to tell you about Keeps. For 5 minutes now and just $1 a day, you never have to worry about hair loss again. Getting started with Keeps is so easy. Sign up takes less than 5 minutes. Just answer a few questions and snap some photos. We all know how to take a selfie. I even have figured out how to take a selfie. I started
took
with
a nice
selfies
one on the golf course today.
I did take a nice one on the golf course with all of us,
we'll
with the little,
that, we'll
the little waterfall and stuff.
Media, yeah.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful. So a licensed doctor remotely reviews your information and recommends the right treatment for you, all without you ever leaving your couch. Keeps offers generic versions of the only two FDA-approved hair loss products out there. Some of you have probably tried them before, but you've never gotten them this easy for this price. Keeps is only $10 to $35 a month. Plus, now you can get your first month free. We got your hookup, y'all. It's one hell of a deal for getting to keep your hair. There's no reason to put this off any longer. Stop hair loss today the easy way with Keeps. To receive your first month of treatment for free, go to keeps.com/road. That's KEEPS.com/road. That's a free month of treatment at keeps.com/road. Keeps hair today, hair tomorrow. I love that.
It's a fantastic read.
That's a fantastic line. But, you know, it's shit I started to worry about now. I'm getting older. You know, it's getting grayer and it's getting thinner, you know. And I want to keep what I got.
Right.
That's all I got to say. It's not being vain. It's just keeping it real, y'all. I want to keep the gray hair that I got. So
we had some advertisers reach out to us. Keiths.com said, would you be interested? And Cold Coffee said, yes, I would.
Yes, I would, sir.
All right, listen, I do want to talk a couple more things about UFC 224, but before we do that, I want to bring in this interview. I had a chance to go to Los Angeles earlier this week, and Simon Simano deserves all the credit for setting this up, but Mauro Ranallo is coming out with this documentary. It airs next week, actually, is the debut, May 25th. Bipolar Rock and Roll is what's called, which of course is Mauro Ranallo's nickname. If you're listening to this show, I'm assuming you know who Mauro Ranallo is, but legendary combat sports announcer. I mean, it did it for Pride, it did it for Strikeforce, is doing it for Bellator at this point, is doing WWE, is doing boxing. I mean, the guy is an incredible, incredible broadcaster and has dealt with a bipolar disorder his entire life. And, man, I'm telling you, this show is powerful. Hopefully you've seen the preview. If you haven't, man, just search out the preview. It's strong. I've actually seen the full thing, and it is I'm going to be honest with you, man. It brought me to tears a couple times. It's not easy to watch, man, especially, you know, I feel like, you know, I mean, I actually know Mauro pretty well, you know, I think everybody that's a part of this industry feels like they know him to at least some degree. And so to not only watch somebody suffer through this stuff, but to watch somebody that you kind of know suffer is pretty powerful. And so I had a chance to talk to Mauro Ranallo. Of course, he's been doing the media rounds, but
he certainly has. That's awesome.
Yeah, man. And I'm proud, man, that he's
people are talking about. And that's what it's all about is opening up dialogue, talking about this stuff.
So we talked about him, and then you know. Of course, I got in some other questions. I got him to talk about some other things. What he thinks about Ronda Rousey. What he thinks about Floyd Mayweather. What he thinks about – oh, of course. I mean, that was off camera. But, of course.
Oh, okay.
A few more things I want to talk about. The UFC 224 and some other things. But I want everybody to hear this interview, which, by the way, is going to be debuted here because we're not even going to put it on Junkie, YouTube, anywhere, anything until next week. So,
Roadshow listeners.
Getting the scoop, son. Here's the bipolar rock and roller himself, Mauro Ranallo.
Well, Mauro, this is an absolutely fantastic project that you've put together, but, I mean, you had to bare your soul a little bit to do it. So I got to ask, first and foremost, I mean, what was the idea? What was the logic? Why did you say, I'm willing to put myself out there like this?
When I went to Toronto in 2006 to work for the Fight Network, I befriended a guy by the name of Haris Usanovic, 15 years younger than me at the time, in his early 20s, just out of Ryerson University, and an editor and an aspiring cameraman and filmmaker. And we began to spend a lot of time together. We became quick friends, and I got to know his family, and he began to see me out of the office a lot more, in my apartment where we would just hang out. And it was interesting, I guess, because he was a Pride Fighting Championships fan, so he already knew I was, and a big fan of mine, a supporter of mine, watched Muay Thai, which I used to do back when he was a kid, 1999-2000 on TSN in Canada. So the more social time we spent together, the more he realized, wow, there is I'm beginning to notice some real changes and interesting patterns here with Mauro. So one, he showed me a short film he had made in his native Bosnia, where his family's from. And it's just and I'm like, you did this by yourself? He goes, yeah. I'm like, dude, you got talent, man. This is great. So then the more he saw me, he finally just said, Mauro, we got to do something with this. Like, it's an amazing, I can't believe you go and call the biggest boxing matches, biggest MMA. You're on Fight Network every day. You're on the radio. And yet, bro, you're dealing with some serious stuff here, man. And I think there's something we can do, and I've always been an advocate for mental health. I gave myself the nickname Bipolar Rock and Roller way back in the 90s when, you know, as much as we don't talk about mental health now, back then it was almost non-existent, and if it was broached, it was done in a very pejorative way. So I said, okay, well, maybe we can do a short film on this and, you know, raise awareness or something, a viral video of some kind where we can at least start the conversation. The more we went into this and the more he realized how much of my life was actually on tape, because I started my career at 16, wrestling in Canada, and even just stuff that we had recorded. I've always been on camera, always been a bit of a ham, always a performer. We realized that, yeah, this is probably a documentary, and it is a rather unique and compelling look at not only someone who was, you know, working at the highest level of his profession, but what that person has had to endure and go through, and realizing how many millions of people around the world. Depression is one of the leading causes of death around the world. Here in the United States, 1 in 5 people will suffer from mental health issues, and the rippling effect. It's not only the person who suffers, the entire family and the social circle. And so because of the stigmas that we still face, the snap out of it, oh, you're faking it, you're looking for attention. Oh, come on, man, go get some fresh air. Just, I want people to realize, no, this is legitimate, and you see it in all of its rawest form. And I don't mind being the proverbial canary in the coal mine. I don't even mind being a casualty. If this were to cost me some work, so be it. Thankfully, Showtime, WWE, Paramount Network, all of my media friends, the amount of feedback I've received, first of all, is humbling. I got goosebumps. But the support and the fact that so many people are saying we need this now. You have inspired me to phone a therapist. You've inspired me to tell my wife. And it really is about the men, John. The alpha male syndrome that we all, especially in my world and our world, where, you know, you show weakness, they say, or you're ashamed of showing the fact that maybe you need to cry or maybe you need to get some help. I want to make it so that it's okay to not be okay. I want people to realize that there is hope for everyone. The fact that we are losing so many people to suicide because of a stigma. I've looked at the chandeliers in the hospital room, the light fixtures, wondering if it could hold my weight. I know the feeling. And because we're not in a wheelchair, because I'm not on crutches, because I don't take insulin or even have cancer to go and have chemotherapy, all debilitating, all incredibly egregious, I'm here to tell you, John, that I would welcome any of those scenarios compared to what we have to go through on a daily basis. And the real pain and suffering is because of the fact it's so unnecessary. So that's why I don't mind bearing my soul as I'm doing now and in the documentary, because I want to save one life.
I was going to ask you, I mean, because watching this, I mean, knowing you as a friend and knowing you as a colleague, I think it made it even more real and more powerful. I think anybody that watches it, it's so well done. I mean, I was brought to tears on a couple different occasions. But I wonder for you, you know, seeing the project come together and watching it from the outside looking in for the first time, I mean, was there any part of you that was like, this is too much? You know, this is, I can't let people see this side of me.
It's funny. I wanted it to be worse, to be honest. When I saw it, and don't get me wrong, it was startling. I felt awkward. I felt embarrassed. At times I cringed. But I realized what the impact was with everyone else in the room and for me. And so I actually made sure I wanted the documentary to be bipolar, because my life, in a nutshell, has been. It's not just a diagnosis or even a label. It is the fact that I have, you know, I call the two biggest pay-per-views in combat sports history. I've been at WrestleMania. I started my career at 16 on national television in Canada. And yet I've been hospitalized 8 to multiple times in my 20s. Didn't think I would escape my 20s. At 21, my first full-time radio job, which was in my hometown. You know, if anyone knows about the radio life, you have to go to Timbuktu and make $500 a month eating macaroni and cheese and tuna. I got to sleep in my own bed and be the local, you know, celebrity. Within months, I was hospitalized because I was still dealing with the death of my best friend at 19, Michael Jansen, which triggered my first real big meltdown that led to my diagnosis. But I wrote a resignation letter because I realized this is not for me. I mean, I did what I did. I was on TV. God, you know, gave me my opportunity to be what I wanted to do, but I'm done. I guess I have to get a regular job or live at home. And so I wrote the letter. My father, he and I have had an interesting relationship my whole life, old school Italian. The discipline was maybe borderline criminal at times growing up. But, I love my dad. I love my mom. I love my entire family. And they've been there for me throughout this whole ordeal. Thankfully, he didn't send the letter. And the program director of the radio station, this is 1991, Brian Labor in Chilliwack, instead of saying, well, what are we doing? This guy, we just gave him a job. He's going to be gone 3 months. Are you kidding? He said, no. There's enough potential, raw talent, work ethic, desire, and he's a good kid. Let's give him a chance. And it began there. And I know I've been so fortunate in my life to have everyone look out for me. And I know that there are millions of people, and people will be watching this, that have nobody. And that is what breaks my heart. And that is what makes me say, you know what? Yeah, I'm a combat sports announcer. I've had a great career. I want my legacy to be just trying to save people's lives through advocacy and through action. This is just the beginning, John. This documentary is just a launch pad. And as there was a picture I put on Instagram, it was like out of The Godfather. Frank Shamrock took me at the end of this. Like the other end of the table was in another time zone. But I'm like, plenty of room at the table for mental health warriors, and the feedback's been astounding.
It's a very powerful piece. I think whether people know you and know your career or not, you know, I think they're going to learn something from it for sure. I want to ask you, you know, about the disease itself, kind of understanding. I mean, you mentioned the tragic loss of your friend as a young man that kind of triggered it. I mean, did that help the progression? I mean, did that contribute to the progression and to what happened? I mean, had that tragedy been avoided, would life be different for you? I don't understand exactly how it works.
Good question. Hindsight being 2020, I think it first began manifesting itself when I got my TV job at 16 in high school, discovered by the wrestling promoter that I'd been watching as a kid and had been visualizing at 5 years old at the events as a debilitatingly shy, nerdy child that this is my world. I'm going to be in this world. And having it come true literally years later, I think the mania began to manifest because my on-camera appearances, even looking back now, like people were raving about it. Like, this is real and wow, this guy's amazing. But it's pretty extreme. It's pretty manic. So, and that is the gift that comes with the curse. And that's the bipolar. And I wish my best friend was still here because, wow, what a journey it's been. And he was a bigger boxing fan than I was. He told me at 18 that I was going to work for Vince McMahon one day. He died at 19. I worked for Vince McMahon at 46. But the bipolar disorder and mental health issues, and I can only speak for myself, is I'm in rare variation of mixed states. And even now I can tell talking to you. The rapid speech, I have racing thoughts. No need for sleep. There was a period of time at that time where I'd be doing morning radio. I'd go to the school to call a basketball, football, volleyball game for local television, then go DJ at a nightclub for 4 hours, go from the nightclub, sleep an hour on the boss's couch at the radio station, repeat it. So I knew there was something going on. Very impulsive, drinking a lot, very promiscuous, as much as, you know, that's a big part of this, by the way, with mental health. You put yourself in risky positions. And so what happened to me, the death triggered all of this, and what started the family noticing, my irritability factor was off the roof. I would start crying for no reason. I would fantasize about my funeral and about death, and I was just not in a good place. And everyone thought I was on drugs. Everyone thought I was just an alcoholic. There was a period of time I remember well, 42 consecutive days where I drank myself into a stupor as a nightclub DJ, obviously trying to self-medicate. When the diagnosis was made, I fought it, just like everybody else. There's no effing way you're calling me crazy. You're crazy. Everyone else is wrong. And I ended up, like I say, in emergency, brought to a psychiatric ward. When I began to start doing research and reading about mental health and bipolar disorder, I thought, wow, I could have written every single word here. And that's where I began to then think, you know, if I'm one of the, you know, how many others? Like, I thought, does it run in my family? Which I quickly discovered on my mother's side, multi-generational. I have a cousin, Claudio, a brilliant chef, owns an amazing restaurant in Vancouver. He's bipolar. We know that it can be a wide variety of factors. And John, this is what really scares me, even talking to you about this. At the end of the day, we really don't know all that much. They tell you, here, take this pill. Why? Because it's been shown that it works for your type of illness. Well, why does it work? We don't know. Well, thank you, but no thank you. I don't want the side effects that I've experienced, 30 pounds on lithium. They gave me something called Latuda once, where the very first night I took it, and hyperbole, right? The greatest word ever? Ronaldo knows hyperbole. No word of a lie, for 4 hours in my apartment, I paced to the point that I was about to run off the patio and jump off the sun deck and end it. And that's supposed to help me? So I sit here, and as I've told everyone, and there's, speaking of stigma, The only thing in my life that has ever, ever helped me be normal is cannabis. And without cannabis, I would not be working. Without cannabis, I would not be alive. And take that for what you will. It has allowed me to write what I write. It has allowed me to be sociable with people in situations where otherwise I would be anxiety-ridden or just not in a good place. So while I sit here, and I know about Will Wheaton, the actor who talks about antidepressants, and believe me, I know that they help people, and people need to seek treatment, John. But please do your due diligence. Please do your research, because Big Pharma is literally killing us.
Well, I was going to ask. I mean, it kind of is a subplot almost of the documentary. It's just a little piece of it. But I know this is
I wanted it to be much larger. But again, we live in a society where we're still wondering about that as well, right?
So then that might answer the question, because, I mean, this is very much about mental health. But I was wondering if you hope that that's, you know, another message that gets out there, is that, you know, cannabis needs to be a little bit more accepted.
100%. And I wish my mother would take it. I wish so many people I know who are victims of the stigma. Well, I'm not going to turn crazy. That makes you lazy. That, you know, all you get are the munchies. Or you sit and melt in the couch. Or you, only dumb people do that, and lazy people. Yeah, lazy people. Anyone look at my work schedule lately? So, I what it's done for me, and I even said this, I wish there was something in cannabis. And yes, I know CBD is a big thing right now for people, but for me it is the THC. And I don't know if there's an amount of THC that they can be put in a pill safely without the maybe overly euphoric effects to help people. But I wish more is investigated. And on top of all this, John, when it comes to mental health treatment, and even me now dealing with it for 28 years, and it's a constant work in progress. There is no cure, my man. We need resources. And for the people who put their bloody lives on the line to go somewhere to fight for this country or for fight for their country, and then we just cast them off when we bring them home. They need mental health help. We need to put millions of dollars. And again, as I know cancer is the worst. I get it. But we all know about cancer. We all know. We discuss it openly. Why can't we do the same thing with something that is literally killing people? Because they can't talk about it, or they're made to feel like they can't talk about it.
So what is the overall goal with this? I mean, education, you said, you know, kind of smashing the stigma is something that you say in there. But what really can be done? As you said, I mean, we need funds, we need resources. So give me the overarching goal for this project.
The main goal for me was to show people what mental health really looks like, and to show the positive, because I'm fully functional as a human being and successful at my job, to show the drawbacks, the impact on families, to educate, to have experts talk about the illness and what it is, but mainly to try to get one person sitting out there watching this documentary going, oh my God, this is me. But I haven't been able to tell anybody because I've been ashamed. I've been embarrassed. Maybe I don't need this rope. Maybe I can put this rope down and make a call and get some help. And already, just with the 30 seconds and the 1 minute teaser, and whether through Instagram, Twitter, email, I can't tell you how many people have already said, save their life, or try to save their life. So what more? I mean, as a human being, guys, I know, yeah, we want to succeed in life. We want to have a career. Too many people don't chase their dreams out of fear. I'm mentally ill. I never stopped chasing my dream. So please, you know, just don't suffer in silence. And I know people out there are going to be watching saying, yeah, this is all nice and what a feel-good story, but so what? The next day we go on with our lives, and there's so many people that are living with this condition right now that, well, how dare you, you know, now, like, people are ashamed. They're embarrassed. Of what? So I applaud those of my brethren in Hollywood, in the music industry. Logic, man, what a great dude. DeMar DeRozan, Kevin Love, the NBA, Mariah Carey. Just please, guys. It's oh man, this could be so easy to fix. Really, just change the mindset.
What should people do if somebody is? If it is that one person that's watching and they say, I identify with that, I know exactly what Morrill's talking about, What should that person do? Where can they reach out? Who should they turn to?
There are, thankfully, a lot of great organizations out there, including NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Illness, and you know what? The doctors. We need better medical conditions. I was hospitalized in America one time. I have money, so I thought I was paying for the best treatment. I've never been in jail, John. I can't imagine jail being much worse. So we need help, but I will say, email me, Mauro@MauroRinello.com, and I mean that. And yet, just reach out to someone that you trust and care. We all have a friend. None of us are truly alone. You might think that, but you're not. Use social media. Go and tweet out, hello there, I need help. Watch what happens. And all we need to do is open the lines of communication. And I hope, like I say, that this becomes, we talk about fights ad nauseum. We talk about the weather ad nauseum. We talk about reality shows ad nauseum. Can we start talking about something just a little more real?
What you've accomplished in your professional career is amazing by any standards. But, you know, knowing the daily battle that you have, I think it makes it even more incredible. But where do you see your future? I mean, where do you see yourself growing professionally, doing, I mean, especially knowing how much of a struggle it is on a daily basis for you to get to work,
yeah,
basically.
Yes, John. Yeah, you're right. I mean, not even 50 years old and everything I could have imagined, and then some. It's incredible. I definitely want to become a bigger and more, hopefully, prominent advocate for mental health issues, but I also believe that I can make it entertaining because in history and throughout even our industry now and in the arts, Robin Williams, God rest his soul, man, my idol. He once said we're all touched by a little bit of madness, and we are in whatever way, shape, or form. For me, I want to make it where you can wear your condition and not be defined by it, but be proud of it. And whether it's through maybe a version of Coachella that deals with the mental health issues. Imagine the artists. Imagine the musical acts. Imagine the comedians. And just have a stage where it literally is open mic and you go and tell your story without fear of judgment or scrutiny. I want to do a mental health podcast. But again, talk to the brilliant minds and talk to the entertainers. And you know what? In the end, I want to just become a voice of hope. I hope to do more voiceover work for audiobooks, maybe. Hey, if a movie trailer company looking for a new voice, a new up-and-comer, this young buck. But no, honestly, I do want to continue as long as I can with WWE, Showtime, and Paramount Network. I love combat sports. I love the storytelling, and I'll do it for as long as they have me. But I definitely want to create and a production company and an entertainment enterprise that has mental health at its core.
What if somebody's watching this documentary and they don't necessarily identify with themselves, but they see somebody else in their life that they say, maybe that's what's going on with this person? Is it okay to reach out to that person,
100%.
Or is that taboo?
That's exactly, John, what they need to do. Please, please, please do. Please, please. And don't matter what they say, fight for it. If they say, no, don't worry, well, how dare you, you know, or none of your business, keep scouting around, because how many people, and again, I know firsthand, people that showed no signs, they had the perfect life, dead at the end of the week.
At the end of the day, what's the target audience here? Do you feel like, I mean, is it combat sports fans?
Nope.
Is it,
you know? No, nope. I want it to be the world. I really, truly do. And you know what? This, and thank you. I'm sure this is not for all ages viewing because it is pretty hard hitting. I would like to make edit a version for kids and schools. And I really believe, especially nowadays, the conversation has to start earlier and earlier. And we see it in children. And again, instead of just simply medicating them. And you'll see what medication has done to me in this documentary. And by the way, I'm not here to rail against all Big Pharma. And I understand certain things help. I've seen what it's done to my mom. I've seen what it's done to myself. I'd prefer something that Mother Nature has provided me.
Fair enough. We've talked about some heavy stuff. Let's get some lighter
sure.
issues, if you're all right. You know, one of the great scenes in there is the crowd chanting "Mamma Mia." You know, I thought that was a beautiful thing, a very high point for you. Where did that start? Where did that phrase start?
It's a tribute to my mom. Duilio Ranallo was is my biggest supporter, and she has had the worst probably life of anyone I can imagine in terms of her health. She lost her eye when she was 6 years old in Italy. She's been on long-term disability longer than I can remember. She has every health condition you can think of. And yet, what a spirit. And, yeah, just a tribute to my mom.
Very beautiful.
And it's, yeah, so because she's always been there for me. She drove me to BC TV studios. I didn't have a license yet when I started my career. And she... she'd been put through the ringer by all of us, but especially me, because, again, when you don't understand something and you see a child in a hospital bed. But, yeah, she likes wrestling. She thinks MMA may be a little too violent. She likes some boxing, but she watches all of it. And that's because her boy is there. And that's, you know, it's not a, it's weird. I always thought, yeah, everyone has catchphrases. I don't need a catchphrases. But it's just, it is a tribute to my mom, and it has become something that has become much larger. And the case in point, at TakeOver, when Ciampa and Gargano ended up in my lap, my headset flew off, and I've never, you know, you're right, I'm an announcer. I'm not a superstar or anything. And to have the crowd do that was pretty, you know, I want to thank the crowd in New Orleans a lot. That was amazing. And it really did make my mom feel cool too. So thank you guys for that.
That's awesome. You know, you talk in the documentary as well about, and this is advice I took from you years ago, and still believe, you know, in work, in broadcast work, in commentary work, you know, preparation is everything. You gotta have
prepare, bro. I know that even with what you do for work. Well, all you guys, I said this to your cohorts at MMA Junkie Radio, you know, being on this side, bro, being the one who's interviewed, because like you say, I'm usually the one asking questions.
It's different.
It's amazing though how many people don't do their prep, John.
Well, where did you get that from? I wonder, I mean, was that something that you just realized, or did somebody instill that lesson?
Born, my friend, and you'll see it in the doc too. For whatever reason, a curious mind. Out of the womb, I was obsessed with knowledge very early. I was reading newspapers and books at a probably much younger age than I should have, and I was obsessed with reading, and it's been something I take to this day. I remember about in my 20s, I used to have a newspaper, and my friend's daughter, she was 5 at the time, I came walking up, and she goes, "Mommy, Uncle Moore doesn't have a newspaper. Is everything okay?" So I'm just, it's weird because I try to incorporate as much of what I know or hear. Like, I try to stay on top of pop culture, the music entertainment industry, because I truly believe that not everyone watching is going to be a diehard fan, but I hope I can try to connect somewhere. They're like, "Hey, that's pretty cool, and now I get it." Or might just think, "What's this idiot talking about?"
Well, you know, MMA fans, we like to claim you as our own, woo! but you're doing some pretty big boxing stuff these days too. So I want to get your thoughts. I mean, for years it was like MMA versus boxing, and MMA, you know, you couldn't be a fan of both. I think
crazy.
That's changing now. But
crazy.
What's the idea? What's the state of boxing right now? Give me an idea of the health.
I have to tell you, man. And again, I've been just blessed, my friend. Do you understand? Like, I took over Showtime Championship Boxing at the end of September 2012, beginning of 2013. Showtime signed Floyd Mayweather Jr. So in my first year of doing championship boxing, I am calling the biggest pay-per-view star in the game, Robert Guerrero, Canelo Alvarez, and so on and so forth. Boxing, and take it from my Hall of Fame broadcast partner, Al Bernstein, who is, you know, the preeminent, I feel, analyst and voice in the sport. You know, he's done this for over 30 years. And this last year and what we continue to see right now, maybe the best of him. And that's a huge credit to a man that not only championed my cause with the documentary, but Steven Espinoza making things happen. And, John, it's just like what happened with the Monday Night Wars with WWE and WCW. Competition in any form should push everyone to be their best. And I believe that MMA, you know, and the success of the UFC and you know, Bellator, all these promotions, it propelled boxing to get, you know, its head out of its butt, although at times the politics are still there. But what I mean is they have to put together the big fights that fans want to see, the best fighting the best. And now, I mean, in 1 year, sir, 2017, Anthony Joshua versus Vladimir Klitschko, 90,000 fans at Wembley Stadium. Anthony Joshua, Carlos Takam in an indoor boxing record, 78,000 in Cardiff. Mayweather McGregor. You look at this weekend, I have a doubleheader, split site. Washington, D.C., Gary Russell Jr., lone loss to Vasily Lomachenko, who's at, you know, another level. But Gary Russell Jr., maybe the fastest hands in the sport, against Joseph Diaz Jr. I called his professional debut on CBS in December 2012. Both of them are Olympians. Adonis Stevenson, one of the most dangerous left hands in the game, defending the light heavyweight title against Badu Jack, who's already a two-division champion. You see me getting excited the way I do about a lot of stuff, but and this is not just to sell it. Boxing's in its best place. ESPN, we have, of course, Showtime, HBO. We have Eddie Hearn wanting to make waves. And again, this will hopefully make everyone say, okay, we got to put our best foot forward and put out the best product. And it's a great time to be a fan of combat sports, really.
It is. You mentioned the crossover fight, of course, Mayweather-McGregor. And we still hear rumblings that is Floyd going to get in an MMA cage?
What did I say when they asked me about Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor in the boxing ring? He will do what Floyd wants to do, and we will watch it. As much as, you know, look at 50 Cent now and Scott Coker. I know you're hanging your head, but brother, you're a journalist, right? I've never called myself that. I don't have a degree. I'm a broadcast personality, play-by-play guy, announcer, whatever. But the reason I say that, look at the rankings, John, or whatever ratings are. We don't live in that world as much as we would love to. We have to put butts in seats. They have a new TV deal, but we have to sell pay-per-views or sell events and whatever it takes. It's a noisy world. There's too much choice. And for me, honestly, in my position, I've lost a lot of work, believe it or not, as much as I work, because everyone's booking the same night and there's competition always. So for me, we have to do whatever can make noise. Scott Coker wants to make noise. Should 50 Cent fight? Probably not. Again, if he steps in the cage, are we going to be watching? Probably yes.
I will absolutely be watching. So when you hear of like a Chuck Tito 3 possibly
happening. Again, I don't want to see it. Because it's because I love and respect them so much, and I don't want to see them embarrass themselves because I don't want to disrespect them like that. But come on, guys. And, look at Muhammad Ali, the greatest of all time, marching him out at 38 to face the wrath of Larry Holmes. I still think, honestly, the people responsible for putting Ali in that situation should be in jail. Especially fighting. I understand baseball and basketball and even football and hockey. Those two are very, violent sports. Fighting, you don't get better with age. You know, the Randy Couture's, the Bernard Hopkins, George Foreman, outliers.
Yeah. Definitely. Let's talk about another crossover athlete then, Ronda Rousey.
Woo!
Lifelong, wrestling fan that you are. Give us the evaluation. How's she doing over there?
When Paul Levesque, Triple H, texted me about Ronda Rousey coming to WWE, I'm not going to lie. At first, I was like, wow, this schedule, she thought she was under the microscope before in the spotlight. I mean, WWE is a machine, a marketing machine. And as much as I look at boxing and UFC or MMA, Bellator, all of us, you look at WWE and its global reach, but the social media, just, it's a juggernaut. And I thought, considering, as we now know, how she handled the losses, and I probably, in my condition, I may have been a lot worse. I wondered, wow, is she going to be able, even though I'm sure she's not going to have the same schedule, and I know Brock Lesnar has an amazing schedule, but I mean, in order for her to gain the respect of the crowd and even her peers, she's going to have to put the work in. He told me she was fully committed, and so when I saw her, and let's face it, her microphone work has never been the best, but so what? A Mirko Krokop, Vitor Emelianenko, she's the baddest woman on the planet in many ways in her. Chris Cyborg, of course. I wish we would have saw that fight. But what happened to WrestleMania and her debut? And again, hyperbole aside, maybe one of the greatest debuts in sports entertainment history. And not only do we credit her, but man, oh man. And of course, you make an investment, but Triple H and Stephanie did yeoman's work. And all involved, Kurt Angle. But yeah, Ronda amazed everyone. I was in the crowd. I actually sat with my brothers way up in the crowd because I wanted to experience WrestleMania as a fan and never got to do that. And I'll tell you, she had the biggest pop of the night. Still gives me goosebumps. So if she can, continue to improve and stay hungry, because that's the other thing. She was one of the biggest stars in the world and make all her money. So, but I, from what I understand, she is fully committed to the cause. So I'm cheering her on.
You mentioned Fedor. You mentioned Krokop. I mean, you have a connection to Japanese MMA. Nothing's been able to replace Pride since then. But you understand the culture over there probably better than most. Do you see, is there an opportunity for a big juggernaut in Japanese MMA, or have those days passed us by?
I don't see it right now. I don't. And it's funny, being back in San Jose last Saturday for Bellator, I'm not going to lie. And, of course, San Jose, one of my favorite cities. And how many amazing events. You know, the town that Frank Shamrock built, really, when he kicked it off legally with Caesar Gracie. But the reason I bring it up now, that presentation, and again, Scott Coker, the connection to Japan, those temple shows for Bellator give me a slight tinge of deja vu and like, okay, this is cool. And that's where, honestly, the UFC, which, again, they want to be sport, and that's great, but when they got rid of the ramp and everything because it was too much like WWE, and now, you know, it works what it works, but you do need, I believe, we are in the entertainment business first. And so, for me, I think Bellator can do even more, and with the storytelling and character development, and as we've seen with guys like Dylan Danis, who... crazy like a fox, as far as I'm concerned. Sure. Oh, am I trying to be Conor McGregor? Whatever. Sean O'Malley. All these characters who are utilizing social media, the microphone. Yeah, it's cliche. You don't all have to sound like pro wrestling heels or Floyd Mayweather. Be the best version of you. If you're the nicest guy in the world with a mean streak inside the cage, let's see that. If you know, let's hear you market yourself, man.
Well, I was going to say, man, I think there was a time when it was probably necessary to differentiate from pro wrestling, right? When people were trying to educate on mixed martial arts, but now maybe not so much.
Buddy, I've always said this, and you brought it up in the past about boxing versus this, boxing versus that. You know, when I left Bellator MMA on Saturday night, and I was walking backstage, there was a section of the audience, and I heard the cheer, and I'm like, what the hell are they saying? Like, the fights are over. Maybe it's these local guys, and I'm listening. And they're chanting NXT at me. And I acknowledge them. They go, so that's an MMA crowd acknowledging NXT. When I go to, buddy, there's so much. And I believe there's still so much crossover to be done with all three in terms of whatever they want to do. I mean, I know business and ego and you know, we're the monsters. But I think there's so many fans that are fans of all three. And if you're not, that's fine, too. But definitely, you can coexist. You're no longer a pariah. Look at DC, Daniel Cormier, who was in the house on Saturday. And so many mixed martial artists are pro wrestling fans and vice versa.
Who's the greatest mixed martial artist of all time?
The greatest mixed martial artist of all time is, get ready for this, three letters, one word, yes. And I'll be running for office next year, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, honestly, the greatest heavyweight of all time is Fedor Emelianenko.
Right.
Greatest mixed martial artist of all time, man. How? Again, what are we talking about?
Frank Shamrock's name out there, right?
Buddy, honest to God, and this is not because he's here and how much he's helped me. Frank Shamrock was the Conor McGregor of his day. Frank Shamrock came around at the wrong time for the sport and for everything else. 5-0, wrecking people. Not even wanting to fight. He hated fighting. And yet, baddest man on the planet. And then what he came out of retirement, what he did for Strikeforce, what he did for MMA in California, what he did for MMA on network television, Frank Shamrock is right up there. But I would say right now, when you take in everything into consideration, Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson is simply incredible. John Jones, Anderson Silva, George St. Pierre. Yes, but there's still, I don't know, I see question marks everywhere there. I don't see any question marks with Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson.
All right, man. Well, you've been great with your time, Moore.
Thank you.
Bipolar Rock and Roller. Everybody's got to watch it.
Thank you.
All right, so that was Moore Ronaldo. I'm telling you, I cannot recommend enough for everybody to watch this. I mean, anybody that's a fan of this show or anybody that listens to the show, of course, will be a fan of Moore Ronaldo, or at least aware of Moore Ronaldo, and you'll want to learn about him. But I'm telling you, I mean, anybody could watch this, you know, whether they know about Moore or not. It's effing powerful, man. I'm telling you, like, please watch this. Please watch this. It's worth it. And, man, just the emotion that he brings to the table, the it's just powerful to me. I mean, what he's saying makes all the damn sense in the world. So, please do check this thing out, man. I'm telling you, after watching it, man. It's definitely worth it. I'll tell you something funny that happened to me, Cold Coffee, traveling. I think I lost a driver's license somewhere. I'm not sure where, but I think I lost a driver's license somewhere because I'm pretty sure that my driver's license isn't expired. But when I flew out the other day, I did a little day trip out to L.A., and when I got there in the morning, the first guy in the morning, he looks at my ID, and he's like, "Hey, bro, now my birthday, by the way, is March 15th, and of course your driver's license always expires on your birthday. So my driver's license is March 15th. The guy looks at it, and sure enough, I don't know what the hell. Again, I'm pretty sure, because I don't remember my license expiring, I'm pretty sure I just lost one somewhere. He goes, "Hey, bro, this expired on your birthday in 2017. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. And the guy, and again, this is first thing in the morning. I'm taking like the 7 o'clock flight out to L.A., which of course you've been on many times for the morning for the lunches out there. He's like, "But don't worry, man." He's like, "You can still fly with this as long as it's within a year of expiration." I'm like, "Okay, it's May and my birthday's in March," but I was like, "All right, thanks, boom,
see ya."
So I go.
But
through
you still
it.
Had to do it on the way back.
So here's what happened. So he's like, "Yeah, man." He's like, "It's expired, but you're lucky because you're still within that year." And I'm like, "Well, I'm not actually player, but thank you. I appreciate that. So I fly. I don't even think twice about it, right? Go out there, you know, hang out, do the thing, come back. On the way back, I'm at LAX, and I walk up, and it's you and I have been there multiple times. I guess they've changed the layout a little bit. So I didn't have pre-check, but of course I had priority or whatever. So I walk up, and the guy's like, "Bro, this is expired, and it's past a year. You can't fly with this." And I'm like, "Well, I don't have anything else on me, and I flew here, you know, this morning on it." And he's like, "I don't know, bro." And he hands it back to me, and he's like, "By the way, you're not even pre-check anyway." He's like, "You need to go down there." He's like, "Maybe that guy will sort it out for you." And I was like, "All right, thanks." So I was like, okay, well, I mean, you basically just denied me, but you're telling me to go down there. Cool. Dude, I walked down to the other one. I hand it to him, and the guy just looks at my ID, looks at my boarding pass. He's like, "All right, thanks."
That's awesome.
So, dude, so bottom line is I'm pretty sure I have a driver's license somewhere that isn't expired.
Wow.
But for some reason in my wallet right now, I only have the expired one.
Yeah.
And three different people I talked to on one day all gave me three different answers.
Yeah.
So, hey.
You have to, but I mean.
Beautiful safety.
That's crazy, though. I mean, because, like, if you don't remember, like, taking your ID out or anything recently.
I know. I think
had to have flown with
it. Sure,
unless it was just like you just did international ones or something.
I'm sure I left it in a bar or something, let's be honest.
And then you were like, "Oh, where's my ID? Oh, here it is."
All right.
You have to start carrying your passport till you get this.
I know. Well, fortunately, next week I have to carry my passport anyway, so I'm going international. Okay, quickly, UFC 224. I know we're late to the game on this. Amanda Nunes, Raquel Pennington, everybody's talked about it. Give me the idea. You were there. You were on the ground. What was the feeling? Again, I don't want to spend the whole show on
you're
this.
You're talking about
everybody's been talking about this, and I feel like we should at least talk about it at least briefly. I have some other things I want to talk about, but at least briefly. What was your take? You were there. You were on the ground. I'm sure you were in the back. You were watching the broadcast. Mm-hmm. You heard everything. Raquel Pennington's corner, sending her back out there after she says she's done. Give me an idea. What was the feeling on the ground in Brazil?
Well, I know I was sitting by Casey and those guys. I know when I saw it, I initially thought, like, wow, that's shocking. She literally kind of says she wants to get out of there. But then when I heard the coach kind of giving her the pep talk, I just initially sort of thought, like, one, okay, yeah, they could stop it. You know, maybe they'll throw the towel if it gets bad. But I initially read it as he was doing what he was supposed to by motivating her to get past whatever moment that she felt, you know. And I always assume, you know, in something like that, they know how far a fighter really can go before they're broke, before they're really done. And it just felt to me that they hadn't got to that point. But at least mentally.
Yeah.
I mean, her nose was destroyed already at that point, you know, and it felt like, you know, going back out there wasn't going to do any good. But it just felt to me like if they were really worried about what damage might have happened, that they would have pulled it, that they would have stopped it.
I didn't hate it.
Part of me was watching. I was kind of thinking that maybe a towel would come back in or if there was an issue. But I didn't remember feeling like, oh, that was a travesty.
Well, that's,
that it didn't
and I guess that's why I wanted to talk about it, because I got to be honest with you, I didn't hate it. And I think what you said, it was that evaluation of body language, of mentality. You know, I've heard a lot of people say, oh, well, look at what happened with Nate Marquardt, and look at the way Trevor Whitman handled that.
Yeah.
But, dude, that was totally different. That was a Nate Marquardt who we all knew was getting close to the end of his career.
Yeah.
You know, he was getting busted up by Kelvin Gastelum, who's, you know, 10 years his senior plus. I mean, he was wobbling back to the corner.
But he was,
you know,
dejected.
I mean?
His head was down.
Yes!
Like, I mean, like Rocky was looking in his eyes, was standing up when it happened. And she said it the one time.
Yep.
And as he was
I'm
like,
done. I want
was
to be
like,
done.
You know, was like, you know, you need to get your mind right. You need to switch where your head's at. You know, there was no more of it. There wasn't, you know, but
more,
coach.
Continued.
There was no, like,
I agree.
You know, backs. And I think
and,
if she would have
so
did that
easy,
then.
Because of what happened after that, because she got taken down right away, and then because, you know, the ground and pound finished everything, I think it's so easy to judge her team.
Yeah.
But let's say it had gone to a decision. Let's say she had fought another 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Let's say she had gotten mounted and it had just been some ground and pound and whatever, and it hadn't gotten as bloody as it got. And
yeah.
The finish
that's
hadn't been
That's
what
I think what people really got, because there was that point where Noah's opened up and
like,
it was just like, ooh.
That's what I think. Like, had it just gone to the end, I don't think people would be, you know, the way they are now, like, oh, my God, that was just so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, had she gone out there, fought to the end, loses 50-45, I don't think people would be like, oh, my God, that was incredibly irresponsible. This was horrible.
Yeah.
This was awful.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. That's why I want to talk about everybody, because obviously I've seen a lot of people crucifying her corner,
yeah,
and I didn't have the issue with it. I get it. If a fighter says they're done, I get it. Yes, the corner should be there to protect them. But, if you put together the physical issue, the physical toll, and the body language, you know, if what you're using is the Marquardt case to compare
the
two.
They were two different spaces.
Completely different.
Yeah. The fact that, I mean, she was, you know, on her own, looking straight in his eye. I mean, I didn't look in her eyes. Like, I wasn't 2 feet away looking in her eyes and realizing that, hey, maybe he didn't see that she wasn't broke. She was having a moment of doubt, and he was like, now it's my point. We've seen this before, you know. You can push past this. And the fact that her girlfriend and Rocky, you know, or at least through her, Tisha releasing the statement saying, like, we're all in agreement, like, that was the right decision.
Right.
Like, she knows she would have been upset if it did stop, you know. I just trust the fact that the coach knows better. I don't think – he has nothing to gain by letting her get her ass whipped, if anything.
Right.
I mean, he's just trying to give her the opportunities, and he's there to motivate. And I think I would have had maybe more issue if she would have kept pressing the issue and then they kept ignoring it. The fact that she said she was done, she expressed she was down. I mean, she realized she was down 4 fucking rounds to nothing.
Of course.
I mean, like, she was probably feeling pretty down and like, I'm getting beat up for nothing. It's not going to change.
Right.
And then at the point, she probably is like, I don't want to be here anymore. And, you know, for him to say what he said, and she made, I think she started inner, you know, channeling what he was saying. It was like, you're right, I need to change this thing. Instead of, you know, but coach, I'm done, but I'm done. You know, if there would have been more, you know, professing like, I can't do this anymore, I need to stop. And then they pushed it out. Then I would have been upset. But the fact that it was said once and then we heard nothing else, you know, and she, you know, you see when you turn around and she's going, you're getting ready to start the round again, she was there. She was ready. There was no fear. She could have, if she wanted to not be there, she literally could have just, after the first punch, curled up and just went into a ball and
that's
ended
it.
If she didn't want
to. Everybody knows.
But she didn't want
to.
She didn't want to do
that. Your neck.
And she didn't do it. So,
I'm telling you, I
wasn't upset about it.
I'm a guy that believes that corners should stop fights more often than they do.
Sure.
And I don't think the corner acted irresponsibly here.
No.
And that's the only reason I want to talk about it. Listen, the other thing I want to talk about, again, I hate talking about a car that's a week old, but since I wasn't there and we couldn't do an and a half, I figured we got at least one name. One name that I want to mention, Davi Hamos. I believe.
Oh yeah.
I believe, and I've said it before, and I want to champion even more. I don't do a good enough job sometimes. I'm trying to do a better job of identifying people that I think you definitely need to watch. I mean, listen, not that there weren't other things to look out for. I mean, you know, Mackenzie Dern and her problems, but her skill. Kelvin Gastelum, you know, a hard fought victory there. Lineker, I mean, all those things. But listen. I love, to me, I mean, everybody's talking about those things. I like the undercards. I like the prelims. I like the people that I need to look out for. And I'm telling you, I think Davi Hamos is going to be a problem in that division. You know, will he be a champion at some point? I don't know. I mean, he may run into some problems. But, dude, he reminds me of Husamar Paharis in the way that he's built. Like, he's got inordinately long arms.
Yeah, I can't believe that. And I said I talked to him in the case. I was like, dude, I can't believe this dude's a lightweight.
Right?
It's
he
ridiculous.
Looks too big for the division.
He's easily a welterweight.
It reminds me of Paharis. The way Paharis, you're like, how the hell does he make 170? You look at Davi Hamos, you're like, how the hell does he make 155? And again, long arms.
Yeah.
His jiu-jitsu is just like, boom, 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 boom. Dude, it's fast. I'm telling you, if you haven't been watching Davi Hamos, watch this guy. He's going to be a problem.
And he's speaking English. I mean, he's doing all the right things to set himself up. I mean, it wasn't great, but I thought he did gave a great interview, showed a lot of personality, but watching him, he was a beast out there. But I remember walking away from that interview, and I was typing up his name, and I looked, and I was like, wait, that was lightweight?
Yeah,
I was like, that's ridiculous.
He's huge.
He is so huge for lightweight. That dude easily welterweight, and he probably swells up near middleweight.
Dude, he's strong.
He's a big boy.
Keep your eye on that. Yeah. I guess I did mention Kelvin Gastelum's name. Should we just be honest, right? Kelvin canceled an interview with us while we were in Brazil with you guys, right?
Yeah, he did, but it made good on media day. But yeah, I mean, yeah, he was upset with some of the coverage that came out.
It was on Twitter. I mean, I tweeted him. It was pretty public out there, but I don't know. I thought it was interesting. That's not something that happens to us a lot, and it was disappointing or whatever. But I guess, you know, he was upset at us. He was upset at myself, and he was upset at the site and the way we covered some stuff. And it was
pretty
public
out there.
But
he's never
upset
with me. Yeah, he was never upset with
me.
But no, we did walk up, and it's funny because when the media day, we went to go have it, and Rafael Cordero was like, oh, I'm a junkie, boo. But then he's like grabbing Fernando. He's like, I kid, I love you. And he was grabbing my arm and he was teasing. And Calvin just kind of laughed. And we're just like, you know. And
we tried to have a one-on-one with him, which we do.
Yeah.
I guess they said no. But, of course, so what you're saying is he did turn down the one-on-one with this.
But
he
media
didn't
day.
He didn't try to screen. He didn't try to say we're not talking.
Yeah, he wasn't being weird on media day. And I think, you know, whatever it's been aired or cleared or whatever. So, I mean, like, media day was great. He gave a great interview to Fernanda and just kind of laughed about the whole situation. So I'm sure whatever he was upset at the time, you know, and I get it, you know, like that's more the right. When we schedule those pre-interviews, we're lucky enough when we get them, you know, there's no guarantee we can't. And if he wanted to not do that, to show like, all right, there's me getting back at you, but media day, he did his obligations, gave a great interview. So, I mean, all's well. So,
all right, this week is UFC Fight Night 129 in Santiago, Chile. As you can tell, as we are recording this podcast, I guess we didn't mention that after we played golf at Aliante, we came back to the Casa de Cocapi. Yeah, we are not in Santiago, Chile. I will say, Jason Silva is there, our photographer that's based in Brazil. So we should have, and I guess we'll find out in the morning, we should have weigh-ins, photos and video and all that.
Nice,
so we're hoping for our best there. And then you know, we'll have photos on fight night. I'm bummed I'm not there. I mean, listen, we've talked about it before. This is not a huge card, but I will say, Demian Maia versus Kamaru Usman, I think is a great
fight.
I think it's a great fight. I think honestly, for Usman, it's a better fight than Ponzinibbio was. I love Demian, and I'm not trying to rule out that he can pull off a submission here, but man. I think this is a tough fight for Damian. I think it's a good matchup for Kamaru Usman.
I think so as well, man. But even like the main card itself, there's some good ones. I mean, I want to see how Alexa, you know, comes and how she comes back.
Tatiana Suarez is
tough.
Oh my God, that's
she's been
a name
she's been
too.
Gone for, was she injured or something? She's been gone
she's
for
had
a while.
Some issues. She is a name that has not gotten a lot of respect. Yeah. And I think
she's undefeated, folks.
Her wrestling is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think that's a great fight. And I love Alexa Grasso, of course, man. I'm a big fan of hers. But I do think this is a tough matchup for Alexa Grasso. Tatiana Suarez, her wrestling is incredible.
Who'd you go with in your staff
I
pick?
Went with Tatiana Suarez.
So did
definitely.
I.
Definitely.
So did I.
Dominic Reyes versus Jared Cannonier. Like
that's
Jared Cannonier a lot. But that Dominic Reyes, a hard-hitting dude as well.
Yeah.
I like Andrea Lee versus Veronica Macedo. Macedo has been out for like damn near like 2 years now at this point. But not hard to look at, I'm just going to say.
Right. like the one of the p- pictures that on the UFC website that actually looks good.
I'm just gonna say.
That is one to watch.
One that is not hard to watch.
But the one I really like is the one I think you're going to right after that is one that starts off the main card and the Vicente Luque.
Yeah, Vicente Luque is
Luque
is
and Chad Laprise, and that is gonna be a good fight.
That's a great one, man. Chad Laprise is kind of quietly built his way up. You know what I mean?
His last three fights, he won by a KO. TKO.
Chad Laprise, and I think part of it is that.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest. Chad has a stutter, man.
It's gotten a lot better.
It's gotten a lot better, but I think maybe that has slowed his public, you know, like his willingness to be out there.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, because I remember even when I was with the UFC, he would do his interviews, and he struggled a lot more with it. Mm-hmm. It's like night and day to what he is doing now. So I don't know if he is just more comfortable, so he speaks easier. I don't know if he went to a speech therapist about it. But I know for a while there, I feel like he didn't want to get out there and do a lot of the interviews, get in front of a lot of cameras, because he felt bad about it, you know? But dude is such a good fighter. And so you're right. He's kind of quiet, you know? And
reminds
when he gets
me a lot of
Gray
Maynard. Gray Maynard used to be a guy that didn't want to talk to people because he had that. He had a stutter, you know?
And then
he got over it and he started talking about more. But, of course,
But now, Chad, there's whole fight. Interviews that sometimes will go through. And I don't think he even stutters like through whole interviews a lot of times now. He's got it. But, yeah, that is going to – I'm really excited about that fight.
Michel Prezeris is moving up to 170 as he absolutely should. That dude is not a lightweight as much as he wants to be. He's a fire hydrant, but the dude can't cut weight. He's got a tough fight in Zach Cummins. But Brandon Moreno versus Alexander Pantoja, it's a rematch from The Ultimate Fighter, but these are two different fighters at this point. That's one I'm incredibly looking forward to. Humberto Bandane versus Gabriel Benitez. I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be a hell of a scrap. And Enrique Barzola versus Brandon Davis on UFC Fight Pass. I'm telling you, this card, I get it. Like, I understand why our bosses did not want to send us down there. Like, there are not a lot of English-speaking fighters on here.
Yeah.
There are not a lot of, like, big click-type, you know, people, the big targets, whatever.
This is going to be a lot of fun to watch.
I'm telling you, stylistically, you look at that.
Yeah.
There are some great fights. Great card.
Great cards. Yeah, it sucks to not be there, but you're right. But, shit, I'll be watching it.
That should be good.
That's going to be a lot of fun.
All right, next week is going to be interesting too, right? So here's what's happening next week, just so you know. I'm going to do Liverpool by myself. So I'm going to do Liverpool. Colt Coffey's not going with me. But I'm going to do Liverpool. Interestingly, Shamakar Sandhu and Abhi Subban will do Bellator 200 in London. And then after that, they're going to come up in time for the weigh-ins. Remember, it's a Friday show and a Sunday show. So they're going to make their way up. So MMA Junkie will have full coverage of Bellator 200. And then I will basically be covering the pre-fight stuff for UFC Fight Night 130, Thompson versus Till, by myself. But then they'll come up. So for weigh-ins and Fight Night, we'll have a full crew. And, yeah, man, I think it's going to be a fun week. Between those two fight cards, I think it's going to be a good week.
Man, who's Craig White, right? That's going up, getting a debut against Neil Magny.
Oh, yeah, he just came in.
Doing him any favors.
Yeah, just came in from Cage Warriors. I mean, at least Magny's still on there. You know, and we'll talk about this next week more. But, yeah, it kind of sucks because the card in Liverpool – I mean, there's some fights.
Jason Knight's on there. I didn't know Knight was on there.
Jason Knight and Makwan Amirkhani.
Yeah.
Come on.
Amirkhani, that's going to be a good one.
That's a great fight right there. Las Vegas own Eric Spicely out there.
Wow, this is kind of a good card, too.
I'm telling you, there's some fun fights on here. But as far as, you know, what's the casual fan looking forward to, you know, they're going to be looking at
Nordine,
one fight.
Nordine Taylor, that's a good one.
There's some fights on here.
Wow. Daniel Kelly.
Yeah.
Daniel Kelly still doing it.
Dan's Army getting in there against Tom Breese, who, remember, Tom Breese, and I'm interested. I want to talk to him about this. I mean, Tom Breese, the one that basically, I hate to say panic attack, but that's basically right. I mean.
Is he the one that tapped out like?
No. Remember in Poland, he had to pull out. He had like a raised. You know, it was basically like the full medical was raised heart rate.
Yeah.
You know, right before, but it sounded kind of like a panic attack.
Yeah.
You know? Which, I mean, goddamn, I'd have a panic attack trying to step into a cage with somebody.
Right.
You damn near had a panic attack just having to go play golf this morning.
Right. My phone was very proud of me. It said I hit my desired range of steps for the day.
Nice.
See, hooray for golf. And good old Jillian Robertson. I like her.
Oh, yeah.
She's fun. She's fun. So, man, that's a good card, man. And then, oh, and Theodora down there at the bottom. You have to go even further down.
See?
And Gina Mazzani and Landsberg's on it. Dude, that's the first time I've looked at that card. That's a good card.
That's what we're here for.
That's a good card.
You in-depth analysis. First time I looked at it. Good.
There's just too much shit.
Well, all right.
But you're the smart guy. I'm just I just bring the looks to the podcast. I hope you all appreciate looking at me.
That's what I always think of, intelligence and looks.
That's right, you know, and I'm working on keeping the looks.
Keeps.com/road. All right, well, listen, whether a pre-show 18 holes is good or not, I don't know.
Felt good.
But it got done.
It did.
It was fun. It was our day off. It was good. We're going to get back into the mix tomorrow. And in the meantime, hopefully this turned out okay. So thanks for listening.